Hello, today is 13th of March 2014. Welcome to the second session of Track B of the Ontology Summit 2014. Track B has the theme Making Use of Ontologies, Tools, Services and Techniques. My name is Christoph Lange and I'm organizing this track together with my co-champion Alan Rector, who cannot be here today unfortunately, and I will start with a very short introduction to what we are expecting in this session today. I am now going to slide 2 of my introductory set of slides, just to recall the mission statement of this track. This is a very brief summary. On the homepage of track B, you'll find more detail. The web of data provides great opportunities for ontology-based services, but it also puts challenges to tools, for example, tools for editing and using ontologies. And it also puts challenges to techniques for example, for ontology engineering or for ontological reasoning. Some of these techniques may have to be rethought and redesigned. Slide 3, main research questions in this track, well, can be summarized as, how can we scale existing tools and techniques to the web? And by this we do not mean small ontologies using URIs as identifiers, but we really mean the large web out there, ontology-based applications that make use of big data out there on the web. The second big research question is how can services benefit from tapping into this wealth of data on the web? And also, so far we've been quite pessimistic, so we've seen the web as a challenge to everything that we have known so far, but maybe ontology-based services are also part of the solution in a world of big data. Maybe they can help to make big data more manageable. For discussing this and other questions, we've set up a page on the Ontolog Wiki, which is linked from this slide, or you can also post your views on this on the mailing list, and if you do so, please give some indication like tools, services, or techniques in the subject, because we'll discuss all tracks, everything in the Ontology Summit on the same mailing list. On slide 4, a very short recap of the first session, which we had on 30th of January. There, we saw one example presented by Tim Osakowski of an ontology-based tool suite that was originally designed for reasoning in the small, how this is now being scaled to ontologies on the web. In the services section, we had a presentation by Chris Welty from IBM Research, one of the developers of the Watson Natural Language Question Answering Engine. And, this is an application that really makes use of big data in order to deliver a useful service. In the end, it turned out that there was actually not so much conventional ontology in it. This sparked some discussions, and this has been recorded in the synthesis, and it will further make its way into the Ontology Summit communique. This was an important finding. And a third talk was by Alan Rector, the same who is also a co-champion of this track. He also gave a talk in this session it was a review of OWL and alternative modeling techniques, for example, frame-based techniques, and he reviewed them from the perspective of engineering knowledge-rich systems. All this is archived at the URL that is linked here. And now let me jump to slide 5, last slide of my introduction about this session. I'm happy to welcome, let me say, 3 to 4 panelists. The 3 first panelists are here in this room already. It's first speaker will be Mike Bergman on tools, presenting the Open Semantic Framework, which is an enterprise platform that integrates and enhances several widely known and widely used ontology tools. The second panelist will be Jose Maria Garcia, speaking on web services, and for those who may have heard of semantic web services, this is now a new variant on this theme, getting more of a linked data flavor into web services. And the third presentation will be by Maria Poveda Villalon about an ontology engineering methodology. Or let's not speak of ontologies, but of linked data vocabularies to emphasize that it is more lightweight and more intended to, better scale to the web. So she will present a technique for engineering such vocabularies. And we are still not quite sure whether Cristina Patuelli will be available today. It was intended that she would present another service that is more directed towards end users, a linked database application that provides all kinds of information to people interested in jazz. We'll now have the presentations, and in parallel, we can use the chat room to collect questions. But after the presentations, each presentation will be around 20 minutes. So if the panelists could please pay attention to this, I will also give you a sign when your time is coming to an end. After this, we'll have a discussion to combine questions and answers about everything that has been presented in this session. With this, my introduction ends, and I would like to hand over to our first panelist, Mike Bergman, speaking on the OSF. Thank you very much.
Well, Christoph, thank you. Thank you very much for the introduction. Peter, as well, for your normal excellent work in getting these things set up and to the forum for inviting us to spend a couple brief minutes here talking about our open semantic framework. If everyone is at the slides, I'd like to go ahead and have everyone proceed to slide 2. What we will be discussing today are firstly some examples of where the open semantic framework is installed so that you have a sense of what it is and what it does. We'll talk a little bit about sort of purpose and background. What I will spend most of the time discussing will be the architecture of the system and what components are within it, and talk a little bit about the status of the framework and where we are going with it. In essence, we have been working on this open source platform for about 5 years. We are now in version 3.0 of the Open Semantic Framework, and it is ready and capable for full enterprise deployment and is being used as such. So let's move on, if we will, to some of the first examples, slide 3. We have listed here 4 examples that I'm going to briefly cover. If you download the PDF accompanying this talk, those links are live because it's rather difficult to demo in this framework. I'm basically just going to show a screenshot of each of the 4 examples, talk briefly about what they do and who's using them. But if later you look at the slides, you'll be able to click on these links and go directly and work with the live. All of these are public sites available on the web that you can inspect and play with at your leisure. So let's first then go to slide 4, the first example. The first example that we have here is called PEG. This is a site supported by United Way of Canada, whose purpose is to put forward community indicators of well-being, things having to do with like poverty, wealth, healthcare, all of those factors that lead to either better or less sustainable communities. And they impaneled us to basically bring together about 45 different data sets in these areas, some census data, some health-related, some community-based survey information, and then that was also matched in with stories from various challenges that community members feel in health and well-being and sustainability. And all of that is integrated together with OSF in the background, with the PEG website being hosted in the Drupal framework as the content management system. That system, if you go to PEG, has a lot of very cool visualization capabilities, mapping, charting, cross-correlations with stories, all of which you can inspect and play with, as well as navigate the ontology behind the scenes, which in the PEG case is a relatively small one. If we then go to slide 5, our second example is now a platform called NOW, which is an acronym that stands for Neighborhoods of Winnipeg. This particular site was commissioned by the City of Winnipeg, Manitoba, for the purpose of putting forward all of the open data that they have as a city, with a particular focus around neighborhoods. This site has more than 500,000 dynamically generated pages. There are roughly 60 large data sets. Every single address in the city is there, all of the property information, zoning information, information around parks and recreation, community services. And basically, through this site, if you are someone interested in investing or building in the city, you can look at where properties are for sale, the characteristics of neighborhoods, compare them one to another. If you are someone interested in moving into the city, you can find out about schools and recreational community service activities. Again, like the earlier PEG system, you can go and explore this through a wide variety of visualization tools, maps, charts, stories, navigate through the domain ontology. And in this particular case, this is a rather large supporting ontology called Muni. It has about 2,500 concepts that govern all aspects of community life in cities in general, and much specific to Winnipeg itself. If we go on to slide 6, the third example is we were commissioned, and the Open Semantic Framework is the back end to the National Health Information Portals in Australia. The example here is for Health Direct. There's actually 3 or 4 different portals that are all driven by OSF in the background. In this particular instance, there's not as much visualization. This is mostly text content that's all been tagged with their ontologies, basically a subset of the mesh ontology that's used for medical subjects in the United States. The Australians have adopted and modified that for their country's purposes. There's about, I believe, 50,000 highly vetted, high-quality health-related articles in various ways, and it's geared toward a general public use that has questions around symptoms that they might have had. They're wanting to know where they need to look for healthcare providers, what kind of illnesses they might be seeing. So it's a first line of information and a triage point for the citizens in Australia to go and discover where they need to turn next for their healthcare needs. This particular site is very much semantic search driven, and as you ask questions and refine and filter by facets of symptoms and so forth, the result sets that get served up to you are very tailored for the particular health questions that you've been asking. Then if we turn to slide 7, this is the Citizen Dan sandbox. This is our own online playground for working with the Open Semantic Framework. In this case, it's basically built around information having to do with my local area here in the United States, Iowa City, and it basically provides census and other community-related information. Again, it's an area where you can explore and see the capabilities of the general OSF platform. Okay, so those are our four areas that I would encourage anyone who's interested to follow up on, follow the links, and explore on your own after this discussion. So if we turn to slide 8, we can summarize the purpose of the Open Semantic Framework as we our intent when we started this 5 years ago was to band together basically the best components we could find in the semantic web space, to do so in a way that was enterprise capable, that had proper access and security restrictions, also had the kinds of deployment and installation support that enterprises would typically require. And our interest was to both combine together sort of best of breed components that already existed in the marketplace, plus the scaffolding and glue to put all of these pieces together in order to provide a turnkey installation service. The system itself is ontology driven in two ways. Firstly, all of the information that's contained on a general OSF instance is governed by one or more domain ontologies that basically covers the subject matter of the portal. And then secondly, we create internal administrative ontologies that, depending on how you have asked questions and what you have viewed, will instruct the system in the background what kind of visualization and data display templates need to be invoked. So we are using ontologies both for the knowledge space and for the actual operation of the system. We turn to slide 9. The basic idea is that OSF is a set of generic tools, generic capabilities and framework that can be deployed virtually in any domain or problem area, and that the way in which it gets tailored for different domains or problem areas is by virtue of the ontologies that are fed to it and the data. So the idea here has been to create a suite of generic tools, all of which can respond to any ontology to capture any domain. Slide 10, as I noted, unlike some systems, we both are using ontologies to capture the problem or knowledge space, as well as using them to control how information gets displayed, which visualization tools get invoked. By virtue of knowing what kinds of types of information, for example, come back in a search or result set, we know that if it's geotagged, it can be mapped. We know if it's got numeric values, it can be charted, and things of that nature. So basically, the entire system is ontology driven. In the background, for administrators, there is a tool very much akin to Web Protégé. It's the OSF ontology tool that enables administrators in context to manage and edit their ontologies in the background. On slide 11, the basic premises here were that we wanted to adopt as best we could W3C standards. So all of the data is stored internally in the system in RDF. All of the ontology work is OWL2, and we use other existing standards. We've adopted a web-oriented architecture, WOA. The repositories themselves are accessed via URIs so that the front ends can basically exist anywhere, and multiple front ends can talk to multiple repositories of information. We go to slide 12. Basically, we've just recapped here, which I think is probably familiar to everyone on this call, the advantages of using the canonical RDF data model at the core here. It is the way by which we can create these generic tools because we only need to basically worry about representing a single RDF representation. Like many of these systems in slide 13, I briefly recap our open world approach with this, which is also based around the W3C standards, and why we think an open world approach is particularly useful and appropriate for knowledge management applications. Okay, if we go to slide 14, let's now focus on the architecture for a couple minutes. At a very, very high level, it's really quite simple. We have a number of existing open source engines that manage the data, ingest the information. On top of those, we have a RESTful series of about 25 now, web services that talk to them in a unified way, and then that web service layer becomes the interface to a front-end content management system, in this case Drupal. It is the case, however, that some of our instances do not use Drupal as the front-end but go directly and manipulate directly the web services. In slide 15, which is, I'm sure, hard for anyone to look at, we'll break it apart here in a second. This basically shows the high-level detailed architecture of the system. Everything that's shown in yellow on that chart is the glue or connecting material that we have developed in order to provide this comprehensive framework. All of the colored boxes represent open source third-party capabilities that we have embedded in that. So let's look briefly at what's at the heart of the system. So slide 16. Right now we have four major engines that drive the entire framework. That is Virtuoso as the open source version of Virtuoso as our triple store. For search and faceting purposes, we added to that Solr. We were one of the first to sort of combine triple store and Solr in the semantic web community. We also include the OWL API for the management and manipulation of the ontology structures. And we have included the GATE system from the University of Sheffield for natural language processing and text processing and tagging. So those are the basic engines that then information in the system is organized by data set. So we'll see here then as we go to slide 17, the combination of data sets and web service tools, which are basically organized around either manipulating those engines down below or providing CRUD level access. It's through the combination of data sets and tool use permissions that we control who can do what with the system. So Oftentimes in a public portal, for example, most all the information will be read-only, but for administrators, of course, they can go in and add data and change ontologies and so forth. Like I said, there's about 25 web services presently in the system, as well as a robust middleware layer for direct manipulation through API. And then lastly, in terms of the architecture, slide 18 shows the way in which we interact with Drupal. In essence, what we have done is to create a series of connectors that abstract out all of this so that a Drupal user and manager that's familiar with the Drupal system can continue to use all the familiar Drupal constructs. And then through the connectors, we in the background seamlessly translate that into how to actually manipulate the web services and the engines underneath. I'll skip over 19. It basically just shows the dynamic interaction of how user interactions call up different result sets, which then allow different selections to be made, which create a virtuous circle of interaction and visualization with the data underneath the system. Data visualization is a key component in the whole system. With our release on slide 20 of OSF 3, which we announced, I believe it was in January, a number of improvements were made to the earlier version 2, tighter integration with Drupal, comprehensive set of test suites, and a lot of command line capabilities for mostly back-end administration of the instances. On slide 21, like anything that's been in development for 5 years and we're a relatively small shop, there are still some weaknesses as we see it in the framework. One is that we have inherited and still use too many Flash components on the data visualization front, and we are in process of swapping all those out with the D3JS JavaScript visualization library. Also, we have seen through our enterprise uses the need for much greater workflow support and some other things, but nonetheless, these point to where we're going probably with OSF4. They do not prevent the system from being deployed and used productively today. On slide 22, there are some additional links, which again, the PDF will provide you access. We have, for example, a 500-document technical wiki that supports all aspects of installing and using OSF, as well as general questions around semantic technology questions. All the code is available for download. There's automatic installers, things of that nature. Those links will take you to those places. And then lastly, slide 23, if anyone is interested, I'd be happy to talk directly with anyone on follow-on beyond this presentation. So that's kind of a quick, fast overview of a very, very comprehensive, large-scale system. We are managing very large data sets and lots of instances in our existing deployments. We haven't really gone into sort of any technical detail here, but I think hopefully this has given you an appreciation for the scope and scale of OSF. So thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Mike. I see some questions have already accumulated in the chat, so we'll get back to these later. For now, we'll switch to I'll hand over to Jose Garcia presenting the Linked Services Initiative.
Okay. So thanks, Christoph, for introducing me and for inviting to be part of this summit. So I'm going to talk today about some initiatives that were that were being developed in the semantic web services scenario in order to try to move the ideas into the web of data. So going to the next slide, slide number 2. Basically, what I will be talking about is, first of all, I will briefly recap what's in semantic web services, basically what's the story so far. Then I will also introduce how services were service descriptions were introduced into the web of data, and then we will have a look at some initiatives in what is the so-called link services paradigm, where there are some different approaches that I'm going to show you. And then finally some conclusions. So next slide, slide number 3. So basically we start from the original view of the classical web services, where we have more or less three main components here. One is the service provider, who usually takes one of their services and register some kind of description of this service in some external repository, which is normally called service registry. And then a service consumer will try to find appropriate services for what he or she wants to achieve, and then contacting the service registry, hopefully he will get some appropriate service so that he can directly contact the service provider in order to bind and to execute the service. So the next slide, slide number 4, is basically the realization of this process. This classical process is that there is a web service which is described using WSDL, the standard language for service description. This WSDL is published in a UDDI registry, which is also a quite old technology in the web service domain. And basically, in this UDDI registry, you will have several actually service descriptions in general pointing to certain services, which are described using WSDL. And then a service consumer should access this registry, and once he or she finds some service, then it will communicate using SOAP. So that's the original vision of web services. But of course, next slide, slide 5, this basically doesn't work, because all the information that we have here is only using syntax-based languages, so there are no semantics here, so it's very difficult to find the actual services that a consumer needs in order to achieve some goal. So in the next slide, slide 6, I sum up which are the deficiencies of the web service technology. So basically, yes, there is technology. There are several different technologies that allow the usage of web services, but as I said, they are only syntactical information, and then they only provide syntactic support for discovery, composition, and execution. So in the end, the usability is basically manual. That's because also we don't find any semantically markup description in services, and semantic web wasn't supported. So then the initial web service technology stack basically failed to realize the promise of web services because of the lack of particular technologies that cope with this scale. And the solution for trying to scale this process were basically to try to automatize service-related tasks. Then the scenario is where the semantic web services vision enters. So basically the mechanized support is needed for all these service-related tasks that are listed in the next slide number 7. So on the one hand, we need some support to design services and to annotate what kind of data they are using. We need support for finding and comparing service providers, for negotiating, selecting specific services in terms of real requirements and preferences. Then also composition is also a real problem with classical web services technologies and execution and monitoring. And in the end, there is also a problem of heterogeneity in the different data formats, protocols, and processes. So in order to provide this mechanized support, semantic web service vision basically provided conceptual models, formal languages, and execution environments, basically from the semantic web, to enable all this automatization. Sorry. So in the next slide, slide number 8, there are some classical examples of semantic web service frameworks that were appearing at that time, like WSMO, OLS, also some the Meteor S architecture from LDS in the USA, and semantic web service framework, and so on and so forth. So these were the original promise of the semantic web services, and to provide a way to automatize all the service-related tasks. So going to the next slide, slide number 9, then, okay, so basically, as I said, this vision of semantic web services are trying to automatize these tasks, also to resolve heterogeneities, and basically to foster scalability. But although existing semantic web service approaches try to address these problems, they are actually considered as heavyweight solutions. They introduce new languages into the ecosystem, which are basically based on expressive formalism that actually provides a higher complexity here. And they were designed using the top-down modeling approach, where first the semantics were first considered, and then try to go down up to the grounding, which was usually in using WSDL-based services. So in the next slide, slide 10, basically what I wanted to say is that because of these very heavyweight solutions and this kind of design model that were envisioned for the semantic web services, in the end it was a failed vision. And basically because of these two things, because on the one hand, the semantic web as it was originally designed, wasn't really adopted by the the broad community, was on the academic staff, because of basically the heavy weight of the ontologies and also the complex reasoning that were trying to provide did not get enough traction. And also another problem that I find here in the semantic web services approach is that they are actually WSDL based. They are mostly trying to describe WSDL based services. And actually WSDL based services uptake is also very, very low. So mostly these kind of classical web services are mostly used intranet or only for specific integration purposes, but they are not really web services. They are just using the web as a transport protocol. But that's it. So what's the next step here? How can we try to achieve the semantic web service original vision of automatizing all these service related tasks? So going to the next slide, slide 11. So let's just try to use the KISS principle, okay? Keep it simple, Steven. Basically, there is a need here for lightweight service ontologies, right? So linked services are about lightweight technologies. We are not more interested. We are not interested anymore in this heavyweight previous proposal. But they have to be simple. They have to be built directly using the W3C standards, as we know, RTF, all semantic annotations for WSDL, which is WSDL, and so on. And then link services are basically promoting a different approach for modeling, which is a bottom-up approach. So we will try to use what is actually there and try to augment these specifications with semantic descriptions. So, and finally also another very important requirement for link services are that they should also cover other grounding approaches, such as mainly RESTful-based services. Because in the end, as I said before, WSDL-based services wasn't really adopted. So, yeah, there are some public WSDL-based services out there, but actually there are not that many. But in contrast, RESTful-based services are more prominent on the web, and they are actually using the web as a way to perform tasks. They are using all the web technologies, not only for transporting the message, but for everything, for accessing the data, for linking the data, and so on. So if we go to the next slide, slide number 12 here, I present one of these very early link services initiatives, which was basically they were based on a light version of WSMO-based services. And that was only one of the semantic web services original approach. And basically they are built on top of existing service descriptions, like WSDL descriptions here for WSDL-based services, but also for RESTful-based services descriptions like HREST and so on. And on top of these descriptions, we basically use a way to semantically annotate those descriptions instead of designing a whole model that everyone should use. Let's try to use to extend existing models like WSDL and HREST here. So with Whistle, they are extended using the semantic annotations for Whistle. Sorry. and for Ahrefs, we are using here MicroWISML, which is basically the layer for semantic annotations. And then these annotations, which are very simple, goes to this core ontology, WISML Lite ontology. On the next slide, slide 13, you can see more or less the basic building blocks of WISML Lite. Actually, there are not that much concepts in this ontology. It's very lightweight. Basically, we have an ontology element. We have a way to describe transformations for the data that is describing in a WISML schema to a conceptual model that we may have using domain ontologies, and then the operations, the interface, the services within WISML are also annotated using some simple concepts from WISMLite ontology, such as capability, which describes basically the functionality, the functional category, which is even more simple, just a way to categorize the functionality provided, and also non-functional parameters, so that it can also be used for ranking and selection negotiation. Next slide, 14. From this original approach to try to make things simpler, then we come to the idea of link services, which is basically the idea of adding link data principles to the description of services, so that this descriptions, as I said, have to be lightweight, have to use lightweight semantics, and that the annotations using this kind of extensions should be easy to do for everyone, and the interlinking, of course, is very important here, so that a user might be able to find related services by using the link Open Data Cloud. And this will really foster a real uptake of these technologies. So next slide, slide 15, shows you an example of these initiatives, which is the minimal service model. So here you can see basically a very simple model to describe services, which are using link data principles. So we are using here several different interlinked models, such as WISML Lite also, but also HREST, also ASA WISDL, and so on and so forth. So yeah, I won't explain in detail this model, but basically you can see that you here for describing a service you just need the service concept, that services has operations, and operations has inputs and outputs, and that's it basically. And the real guts here are the link to other different vocabularies that have been used that may also provide more knowledge to the models. So this is you can find more information in the iServ link I'm providing. Basically, iServ it's not playing here, but it's a service repository which contains descriptions made in using the minimal service model shown here. So next slide, slide 16. So with this kind of different approach, are we going to fail again? So my opinion is that Probably not, because here linked data is basically gaining momentum. I would say that it's the most successful outcome of a semantic web initiative right now. And also another important thing here is that these kind of models are also supporting from the very beginning RESTful services, which are the actual web services that are around. But also one thing that one may ask here is, what about non-web services? Because we are talking only on web services, but there are other services that are not accessed, are not being used using the web, right? I'm talking about physical services, I don't know, like plumber, or you want to think about like contracting your ADSL or internet or whatever. So these kind of services, how can we actually describe these services also and try to take advantage or use the semantic web technologies and the linked data in particular in order to better process them and automatize service-related tasks. So in next slide, slide 17, I'm going to present basically another Link Services Initiative, which is Link USDL. So USDL is the Universal Service Description Language, what it stands for, and it was a service description language mainly developed by SAP, and it was developed through the work on different European projects here. With this language, basically, the main objective was to try to come up with a generic service description language that could describe any kind of services, not only web services. So that was the original model of all this. But on top of USDL, and then the Link USDL initiative was formed. And here, basically, Link USDL, what we are trying to do is to promote the use of this USDL language on the web. And for that, basically, this USDL model, which is quite huge, is being remodeled using linked data principles. So, for instance, here we are trying to use existing vocabularies to connect the language, such as good relations, the minimal service model I have already presented, flow, etc. Within this initiative, there are several proposed vocabularies for different things. So we have a core vocabulary, but we are also promoting a pricing vocabulary to define pricing models of web services, or not only web services, but services in general. Also, service level agreements and so on. And this initiative, Link USDL, was it's a work in progress, but the core vocabulary was first version was released just past January. And this initiative was basically in the beginning driven by the Open University in the UK and SAP Research. In the next slide, you can see slide number 18. You can see the model, the core model of Link USDL. So here we have several vocabularies being used, such as I said, good relations, there are time ontology, V-card, cost concepts, and so on. And basically here we are trying to define the core concepts of service economy, such as services itself, but also service offerings, different business entities that are involved in the in service processes, and how to interact with services in order to be able to access them. And so and the next slide, 19. Yeah, as I said, this is a Link USDL is an ongoing effort. So apart from the core vocabulary, there are other vocabularies that are being worked on, such as the pricing model, as I said, and the agreements model. This extension vocabularies can be accessed via the GitHub repository, where we are basically publishing all the models and also documentation. So please have a look at them. In the previous line, in slide 18, you had the link to the main Link USDL GitHub. But also here, I would like to talk briefly about Link USDL agreements, which is an extension to support the definition of service level agreements. Using also linked data principles. So this current initiative is a joint collaboration also between Open University, the University of Sevilla in Spain, Glasgow Institute of Technology, and STI Innsbruck, where I'm working currently. So the idea, as I said, is the connection with the Link USDL core and with other vocabularies. And we are basically using as a foundation WS agreement to try to reuse all the tooling support that has been done in the, let's say, the syntactic only world of services in the context of WS agreement model. So please, if you are interested in having a look at these kind of models, please go to the GitHub repository. Here you have also a link to the USDL, Link USDL agreement model, which is in a very early stage, but we currently have a first draft model and an example of the Amazon EC2 service level agreement models using this Link USDL agreement vocabulary. So next slide, and I'm just finishing. It's just a short recap. As I tried to explain, basically what we knew as classical web services and semantic web services are dead. And now the trend is to try to use the web of data using link services in order to get a real uptake of all these technologies and a real automatization of service-related tasks. Basically the tagline is just try to keep it simple and keep it close to what our service actually is. And for pursuing this main objective, we are currently working on Link USDL. So, yeah, that's it. Thank you very much. That's slide 21, just to...
Thanks, Jose, for your presentation. If there are any people listening to the teleconference but not yet in the chat room, there is a link to the chat room. That's item 2 at the top of the homepage about today's session. I'd like to invite you to join the chat room for discussion. But for now, we'll have the third presentation by Maria Pobeda about a reuse-based lightweight method for developing linked data ontologies and vocabularies. Maria, I'd like to hand over to you now.
Good afternoon, and I'm going to present the topic of my PhD thesis, what will be mainly an overview of what I've been exploring and trying to put together in order to develop this method. So the work is entitled A Reuse-Based Lightweight Method for Developing Linked Data Ontologies and Vocabularies. And as you see in the first slide, this work is supervised by Mari Carmen Suárez de Figueroa and Asunción Gómez Pérez. I would like to say that as it is an ongoing work, I might be missing something or misunderstood something, so it is not only a talk from me, and you make questions, but probably I will also making questions to the audience so that I can get your feedback and improve my current work. So next is a slide. In the slide 2, I just want to say that I'm going to use ontology and vocabulary indistinctly during this presentation. Personally, I don't think they are the same, but I really find difficulties to define the separating lines between them. And then I just this note just to avoid the focusing the discussion in this terminology, because we could join a never-ending discussion about this. So next slide, please. This slide just shows the structure of the talk. I will motivate the problem I pretend to solve with my PhD thesis. Then I will show an overview of the proposed method, and then just wrap up with some conclusions on future work. Next slide. So in slide number 4, you can see a picture what is a typical linked data development scenario project. The idea is that you have some kind of data, maybe in databases or CSV files, tests, or coming from sensors, and you want to translate them into RDF and publish as linked data. So in the well-known literature about linked data, you can read that you need to follow the following steps. First, you have to reuse terms that are already used in the Link Open Data Cloud. If those terms are not enough to define your data, you should create terms in a namespace that you can control. And then you somehow put them all together and you will come up with the vocabulary describing your data. Once you have your vocabulary, you can annotate your data, generate your RDFs, and publish your data set. Okay, next slide. In the slide number 5, I want to show the practical problems with a developer are trying to generate that vocabulary. So first, they have to address the questions of where can I find those vocabularies and those terms that are already used. And when I find the vocabulary, which ontologies of vocabulary should I reuse or the elements? And how much information, maybe you find a really big vocabulary and you only need a part of it. Then, if it is not enough to describe your data, how should I create terms according to both linked data principles and also following some ontological foundation and making a correct modeling that you have to add to what you are reducing? And finally, how do I actually link or create the whole vocabulary? So, I have to say that the scope of this work is just these 3 boxes. So once you have the vocabulary and generate your data, it's out of the scope of this talk and out of the scope of my thesis too. So in the next slide, in the slide 6, I would like to point out some characteristics or some consideration in the linked data development in order to to differentiate then the link data scenario from the any other ontology development scenario. That is, what is different in data? Why a different use case? Why not use the system methodologies that we already know? So the first consideration is that normally in the link data development there is like a fast prototyping or rapid development. Very rarely you will have like 1 year to generate a first model and then refine it during 6 months more. It's usually that you have to provide models and very fast deliverables. In addition, in this scenario, the architecture underlying is the web, so it is really different from having an ontology running in your isolated application, and you don't need to know about the web architecture. In this case, you do, and also it implies also to use the W3C standards for ontology vocabularies. What, in the other hand, could be an advantage because you don't really need to worry much about the underlying logics because you will have to use OWL, RDFS, or SCOS. You don't need to choose between frames, prolog, or OWL. In addition, what usually happens in these developments is that the person creating the vocabularies are not knowledge representation experts. They are not really aware of description logics, for example, of what is open word assumption and closed word assumption. But most of the times they are domain experts, and somehow they are afraid of semantics and meanings and axioms. And finally, there are no fixed requirements. That is, as more data is coming, you have to adapt your model and your processes to the new requirements. In addition, some considerations about this proposal is that it has to be lightweight for what I have said before, that agile and rapid developments are not fixed requirements. And it needs to provide tools and techniques and workflows and examples to guide the developers in this development. So the focus is to keep the core activities from the well-known ontological engineering methodologies. In addition, we propose this method as data-driven. That is, the starting point of the whole process is the data you want to describe. And we will talk later about this. In addition, it has to be based in the reused vocabularies. First, because it is what is set in the linked data best practices, and also because it increases interoperability and decreases costs, so make it faster as well. And also, again, that it has to be web-oriented, that is, it has to consider the linked data principle during the process. In the next slide, that is slide 7, I'm going to review some of the better-known methodologies for development for ontology development. I'm not sure if you can see clearly the names in the third row of boxes, but anyway, the box in the left corresponds to the reference number 1, and the one in the right corresponds to reference number 8. So you can follow the references in the bottom. So this literature is divided into literature according ontology development and literature according linked data development. In the side of the ontology development, I have divided the references into heavyweight methodologies and lightweight methodologies. So within the heavyweight methodologies, we discard all of them because they propose time and resource consuming processes, but it will not be suitable for this use case. In the fifth reference, that is extreme method, it doesn't support the evolution of the requirement. So if the data, if new data is coming, our requirements will change, and this method doesn't support this scenario. The reference number six is the extreme design methodology that is only based in the reuse of ontology design patterns, what leaves behind most of the vocabularies that are already used in the link open data cloud. In addition, all the methodologies I have mentioned up to now are based in the competence sequencing techniques for extracting the requirements. I will be more precise in this point later, because this is not suitable for our use case that is based in the data, not in competency questions. Finally, the rapid OWL methodology, that is the number seven, doesn't mention about the use of the resources. And finally, none of them are grounded in the linked data principle. They do not consider these special requirements for this scenario. And finally, the documentation I had about linked data development is more focused in the generation and publishing of the data than in creating the vocabulary. So it says what to do but not how to do it. So please, in next slide, well, in slide 8, we just present that we are going to move on to the overview of the proposed method. So next slide is slide 9, and it shows the workflow with the proposal consisting in a lightweight method for building the ontologies. It is called LOT, from Link Open Terms Methodology. And as you see in the picture, it is based in the data that we take as requirements. So once we extract the terminology directly from the data, we will have the search activity where we will be looking, we will be trying to answer the question, where can I find the vocabularies? At the beginning, we thought about that, solving this problem by means of a technological contribution, but maybe it has changed over this year, so I really have a doubt here I want to expose to you, or maybe you can say it's no sense to try to solve this technologically, or you find some requirements that some missing points in current search engines that we could provide. I don't know, actually. Well, once we find the vocabularies and the terms, we have to select which one we want to reuse. In this step, we would like to solve the question of which vocabularies and elements should I reuse, and we plan to provide methodological contributions and also technological support for some part. In the methodological contribution, we plan to have in talk on both linked data principles and knowledge modeling criteria in order to select the most suitable resources. So once the elements that are going to be reduced are selected, they have to be integrated in the new vocabulary. So in this step, we need to solve how much information should I reuse from a given vocabulary, and how to actually reuse that, how to actually incorporate that knowledge or statements to my ontology, and how to link them. In this case, we are more focused in methodological contributions. The method proposes a loop in order to complete your model until you can represent all the data you need to annotate. For this step, we also propose methodological contributions in order to answer how should I create new terms according both to linked data principles and ontological foundation or modeling criteria. And finally, when the vocabulary is created, we propose to evaluate it. And in this step, we propose a technological contribution that is called OOPS for Ontology Pitfall Scanner that in fact, I was presenting last year in this Ontology Summit. So in the following, we are going to see its activity in a bit more detail. So in the next slide, slide 10, we have ontology search that refers to the activity of finding candidate ontologies or modules or statements. So it has to be... it's focused on reusing what is already used in Link Open Data. So if you find any other ontology it will that is not used in the cloud, it will save time for the development, but it's not going to be it's not going to increase the interoperability with the cloud because you will be the first one using it. In addition, as I said, it is based on the terminology extracted from the data. So in this sense, it is different from the new methodology, for example, because in the new methodology, they use the competency question techniques, and from these competency questions, they extract the most appearing terms, and from with those terms, you go and search for ontologies. So in this method, we make it more agile, taking those terms that are going to describe the data, taking that from the data structure or test or the sensor or databases. And we consider the competency question technique more suitable for ontology evaluation purposes that will be done later. Okay, so in order to extract the terminology, we can use tools as FreeLink for free test. But for example, I don't know whether there are available tools for extracting the terms in CSV files or databases. For example, you can extract the headers, but there might be concepts within the values or the cells. So if someone wants to propose something, I'm open to listen for suggestions. And the tools we can use in this step is Love, that gathers a lot of, I think, 400 and something else ontologies that are most of them already using Link Data. And also you can know the vocabularies that are using Link Data in the Log2 stats. And the other search engines, I mentioned them, but they doesn't ensure you that they are used already. And also there are some domain-based registries as BioPortal or Smart City that is useful for finding ontologies in a given domain, and then you don't need to disambiguate your search. So next slide. In slide 11, we see the ontology selection activity. And in this case, we focus on assessment of what you have found based on linked data principles and modeling issues first. And then for these two points, you can use evaluation tools as OOPS looks for some characteristics related to linked data. And Triple Checker also look for namespace hijacking, that is using terms that are not defined in some other namespace. In this case, Triple Checker is already integrated into OOPS, and Vapor that looks for the correct configuration of the content negotiation is going to be included soon. For the modeling issues, we will propose to use OOPS as well, reasoners with providing testing data so that you can find inconsistencies, or manual review. For the domain coverage, that is, you have to check if the terms you are going to to reuse really are really going to cover part of your data. So you have to make a data-driven domain coverage. And finally, you can check whether your potentials resource that you are thinking about to use are already used in linked data. So you can use the Log2Stats portal or Syndice, for example. In this slide 12, we provide some notions for the integrate activity. So this activity refers to including one ontology into another according to the Neon glossary. Well, in this case, it has to be with how much information should I reuse, and once you know what you want to reuse, how do you practically reuse those elements or vocabularies? So we try to answer the question, should I import the other ontology? And when? Only if I need the whole ontology or if I need more than a threshold? No. What is the cost of importing an ontology? Or if I don't need really the whole model, should I reference only the part that I need? And how do I do it? Do I replicate manually the statements or merging ontologies? How can I do it? So we made a preliminary analysis of this, trying to analyze how the ontologies registered in LOV, in LOV, were reusing other ontologies. And we found a lot of intermediate problems that were really interested in deep, but made the whole experiment really, really slow. At the end, we found that there was a lot of mismatches between URIs. For example, a mismatch between a URI using an all import statement and the one used as preferring the ontology being imported, or so define it again the URI, or also mismatches between versions. That is, the ontology retrieved when importing a URI was different than the one looking in the website, for example. So if you include one and looking at the documentation in the other side was incompatible. So at the end, they were aside the problems trying to look at this reuse in leaked data. So if someone want to look at the study and continue somehow, we are open for collaboration in this topic. So yes, what we tried to answer in that paper was to provide threshold to say from this point or in this situation you need to import and do this way, and these other cases it's better if you modularize the ontology or to just reuse some statements. And that is still work to do. And in this step, it doesn't make sense really, I think, to provide a technological contribution, because what you will need to use is an ontology editor and its plugins like module extraction or reuse, statement reuse, or maybe even a test editor. So in the next slide 13, it is about ontology enrichment, and it refers to the activity of extending an ontology with new conceptual structures. That is to complete or to finish your model. So the focus here is to provide guidelines to help people to create terms according to ontological foundation and make a correct model decisions, and also follow the linked data principles. So for the ontology development, you can point to ontology development 101 ontology engineering patterns. The URL is there in the website. And also try to extract the ontology conceptualization and formalization techniques that are provided from in existing methodologies. And some recommendations from the linked data side is to link to existing entities, provide human readable documentation. Well, even though I think that is a good practice in both, in linked data and not in linked data environments. And also to keep the semantics of the terms that you are reusing. That is, you find a term in a vocabulary, you need to go to that vocabulary and understand what does really mean, not just get the label and suppose and that is what you need and start adding properties to that concept. You have to keep what was the first purpose of that concept. Again, for this activity, you need to use an ontology editor. So, in summary, what will be the first aim with the guidelines for this activity will be to make people to lose their fear to create specific ontologies in this linked data where the domain expert are really afraid of creating an action or even to make explicit the domain and range of a relationship. And I think that's the challenge. Next slide, please. In slide 14, this is about ontology evaluation. That is checking the technological quality of an ontology like some frame of reference. So in this case, again, we want to check our ontology from a linked data perspective and modeling issues. And also make sure that you can model the data you want to annotate. So again, these tools are the same that you will use to select the ontologies or terms that you want to reuse. So again, you can check your ontology against OOPs, as you might do with the candidates want to reuse. You might want to check your ontology with triple checker, but again, it is already included in OOPs. And also you need to evaluate your ontology against other aspects. Again, modeling issues with reasoners and manual review, domain coverage, and comparing your ontology and your data that could be your requirements. Maybe you have to test it against the application is going to use ontology, then one of the techniques would be to really make sure that your ontology can answer the queries you want to ask to it. And maybe you can also use syntax validators. And next ontology, next slide. We are going to wrap up the presentation exposing some conclusions and future line of work. Next slide. So in slide 16, there are the conclusions that in summary, there are a lot of tools and techniques that have been already proposed that have to be connected. So there should be a workflow when they say this is the input of an activity and this is the input for the other one and these are the techniques and threshold and recommendations for each activity. Personally, I think that the most difficult challenge is to make more lightweight the ontology conceptualization and formalization activities. That is, to make easily understandable for people that is not familiar with knowledge representation techniques how to model, I don't know, an NRE relationship or how to create several modules for the ontology and add expressivity and maybe use some values or restrictions in their models. Finally, for the future work, for my side, there is a lot of stuff to do, like provide actually the detailed guidelines, include a sample for everything. I really would like to suggest thresholds for the reuse part, and also to provide really recommendations and say to people what are the implications of importing an ontology, that they need to know that you are committing to a model and that model can be updated. You are not going to know that unless you check it, or if you just reuse some parts of the ontology but you don't import it into your model might be out of date at some point in time. And so that would be interesting to write down and provide guidelines to these domain experts. And yeah, finally test all this with real users. And finally, in the next slide, you can find the URLs for all the systems I have been talking about, but I didn't include the URL because of the space.
Okay, Maria, thank you very much for your presentation. We now have around 20 minutes for discussion. And to kick off the discussion, well, I mean, first of all, I see that a lot of questions and answers have accumulated in the chat room already, which is great. I hope we'll be able to address all of them. But let me point you back, well, to the big picture of this Ontology Summit and to the first presentation we've had in this session, with a question to Mike Bergman. Looking at the third presentation, this was clearly about engineering ontologies for the web of data. And recall that the theme of this year's Ontology Summit is Big Data and Semantic Web Meet Applied Ontology. So I could clearly see the connection to the web of data, which is big. And, well, the second presentation spoke of reducing the complexity of web services by using linked data technology. To my understanding, it was primarily to gain wider acceptance for semantic web service descriptions. But to my understanding, it was not so much because we want to scale services to the big web of data. Maybe, Jose, you might want to clarify this, but my first question is to Mike. In the OSF, I'm wondering at the moment, it seemed to me that this was a tool mainly for building single web presences. I did see data sets mentioned somewhere, but Mike, could you maybe clarify in what way your tool scales to the semantic web and to big data?
I think it basically comes from the nature of the architecture, where the systems actually can speak to multiple repositories. So they are, in essence, there are no scale limitations to the system. I'm not quite sure. I mean, we did not set out to address big data per se, but any data that could be found and needed to be integrated together from distributed locations. I don't know if that's answering your question.
Which is great, actually. Let me just use the opportunity to point everybody to track D. Here in this Ontology Summit, we pretty much emphasize the variety aspect of big data, and I think that relates to, Mike, to what you just said about heterogeneity and, well, distributed data sources. So thanks very much for clarifying. Let me also ask the similar question to Jose. Did you rather just use approaches from the linked data world, or is your linked web services approach also contributing and making the web of big data more usable?
Yeah, I would say that actually the main thing of the main aim of of this this approach is, as you said before, is to reduce complexity. And I think that by reducing complexity, you are actually trying to cope with the scale of the web. So in that sense, I think that these kind of initiatives actually try to go into these large data sets, large amount of data that we have in the web of data. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, I think I shall now open the stage to everybody who has questions. So now is the time to no longer just type them into the chat, but you can in this on this chat room webpage there is a a sign to raise your hand. That's a button somewhere in the lower right corner of the page. So feel free to make use of this and ask questions to the speakers. Any questions about these first points? Peter Yim?
Yes. I have a question for Mike Berkman. Mike, thank you for the presentation. It's really great work. On your first two examples, which are both sort of community information site, you did mention that in the PEC site, a very simple ontology was involved, whereas in the Winnipeg neighborhoods site, highly complex, at least thousands of concepts were involved. What sort of were the main drivers for, let's say, a fairly simple versus a fairly, I would say, fine-grained approach towards the adopting an ontology? Was it customer requirements, budget, or what drove that?
It was absolutely customer requirements. In the case of PEG, they knew what their scope was going in with regard to sort of the key drivers that they saw for sustainability measures at the community level. As I mentioned, things like poverty and health, income, education. And they also knew the data sources that they wanted to interoperate and bring into the system. In the case of the neighborhoods of Winnipeg instance, their intent there is to basically be a complete community-based, city-based clearinghouse of information relevant to neighborhoods. And so for them, what was important was to have a comprehensive scope. And for that, I saw that you wanted to see the links. I will post those up later. They adopted a generalized ontology that we had created by the name of MUNI. MUNI is itself was an outgrowth of a British vocabulary. I believe it's called the Integrated Services Vocabulary. That was actually developed as a thesaurus a number of years ago that we ontologized as basically a kind of a comprehensive concept coverage of community-based topics. So in all cases, and this goes back actually to Christoph's question, I mean, the customers define for us what their scope and interest is, and frankly, in most cases, they have not wanted us to talk to the web of data. Mostly their problem has been that they have internal relational data stores, they have things in spreadsheets, they've got a lot of written documents, all of which are unconnected. And so almost entirely the focus has been inward looking, I guess you might say, in terms of interoperating information as opposed to bringing in external linked data. But in all cases, it's really been customer driven in terms of the scope of these ontologies, the domain ontologies. And generally speaking, I would also say that they are not really very interested in complex relations or properties. They are more interested in sort of comprehensive coverage and finding logical placeholders for cross-relating information that they have on hand.
Great, thanks. While I have you here, were all these ontologies a subset of the Umbel ontology that you guys developed?
No, not at all. As a matter of, however, all of them have been mapped to Umbel for basically grounding and orientation purposes. But no, they've truly been domain ontologies, not upper ontologies.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. Another question by Les Morgan. Les Morgan, are you here? Star 7 to unmute. Or maybe type your question into the chat.
Yes, he seems to have typed it twice.
That Les did ask if anyone has linked in with WordPress, and no, they have not.
Oh, right.
Also, there was another question raised about our leverage of existing RDF capabilities in Drupal, and we have used none. And the reason is the RDF efforts that have been most visible to date with Drupal are geared toward exposing what's already in the Drupal data stores as RDF or linked data. We've looked through the other end of the telescope, which is to basically use Drupal as a content management front end for managing RDF-oriented data stores. So we're not so much interested in exposing the underlying Drupal stuff, but using Drupal as a well-known front end with a lot of additional modules that can be used to sit on top of managing a semantic data stores.
Speaking of Drupal, by the way, let me feed back the discussion to Maria and vocabulary engineering. Maria, have you ever thought of integrating your methodology into some kind of an editor? I recall that there is a system, not sure whether it's still actively maintained, that's called Neologism. I'm pasting the link into the chat now, that is a Drupal-based editor for semantic web vocabularies. What do you think about using your methodology in such tools?
So, yeah, to incorporate or to provide the missing points that I can address. But I didn't focus on a given ontology editor. That is, I would like to provide like a pipe in order to join several isolated tools that are there, and you have to use one here, and then you hand them manually the output and then put it somewhere else. But really in a given to introduce it into Protégé, because it's I think the first ontology editor, and they provide a really easy API to provide new plugins, and also it's moving into the web with this web Protégé, so maybe that, and yes, I will have a look at also at Neologisms.
Okay, but then again, getting back to the theme that this discussion seems to have, many users might already consider Protégé too heavyweight, and I think it does require some previous knowledge about semantic web, whereas I could imagine that, editors based on content management systems might be, more widely accepted.
Okay, I see. I haven't thought about that maybe because I don't find Protégé really heavyweight. So I didn't think it's a problem. That's why I need the people telling, I need this, I need that, because, yes, for example, I didn't. And also I think that depends on your background. For example, if you're learned in Logix, you will not find, I think, maybe Protégé Heavyweight. But if you come from the software development field or from you are a geologist or some domain expertise, maybe that there is a problem with Protégé for in those cases. So, yeah, different for different users. And I didn't thought about neurologism before, so I will write it down. Thanks.
Thank you. So don't get me wrong, I'm more of an academic than an end user, so I am not the end user who is telling you what is needed. This would have to be done by others. We have another question in the queue by Simon Sparrow. Simon?
Question for Maria and note on the tool which was used as part of the last Ontology Summit's winning hackathon quality review is from the publication seems to be getting better. But one thing I was going to ask about is that in your discussions, you were talking about the issue of presenting content to subject matter experts in ways that they could understand, so that even if Protégé was lighter weight, being able to see things like some of the more complicated restriction classes was an issue of concern. And at least that's what I thought I heard you were saying. And I was wondering what you thought about different approaches like renderings in controlled natural languages or absorbing restriction classes so that they look more like specialized constraints on ranges or domains where that's appropriate. How you were thinking about that sort of, or what other sorts of presentation you were thinking about.
Yeah, I don't know if I have understood it completely, but I think what I think about providing detailed guidelines with example that includes the samples in natural language and for sure details, pictures that shows the models, for example, with detailed information and then some translation into the OWL code that they should expect or provide. The problem with these methodologies is that they are, I think from the academic point of view, I might be wrong, they should be independent from the Protégé. So I'm more pragmatic and I will provide pictures of Protégé and guidelines of you have to do this, and that. But that might be out of date really soon, and also someone could say, but this methodology is only for this tool. So we need to focus on the ontology language syntax, maybe that or something, or Manchester syntax, and then provide pictures and natural language and the relation of all of them. And of course, natural language providing a support for the decisions, like, I don't know. If you don't make an NARE relationship, you will not be able to ask for something, for example, and then two separated samples. I don't know if that was.
That's some of that's close enough. Thanks.
There are any further questions? Peter, how much time is left?
Well, I guess you should start wrapping us up in the next few minutes. So please go ahead and do the summary and conclusions.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Peter, for running the session. And first of all, thanks very much to all of our three speakers of today, to Mike, to Jose, and to Maria. Well, you gave very inspiring presentations. The question and answer session was maybe a bit short, but we had good quality questions and also good quality answers. The mailing list and the wiki is open for continuing this at any time. And there are also further, this was the last session of track B in the Ontology Summit, but the Ontology Summit is going on for around 1.5 months. So please, find other events that you're interested in, follow the invitation, and we'd like to welcome you to the further events of this summit. Thanks very much to all of you for attending tonight. Well, tonight, this morning, wherever you may be. Thank you.
Thank you. Great session.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.